Pray for humanity. Every single prayer could be a prayer for humanity by simply stating the words on each point that this includes all humanity, which means all individuals, collectively and universally. God is omnipresent, and the omnipresence of God covers all space. And since God is mind, it covers the mind of everyone. Since God is all spirit, it covers the substance of everyone. The same with soul, being spiritual sense, it covers the spiritual senses of everyone. It covers the principle that governs everyone. It covers the life that is the life of everyone. It covers truth, which is the truth of everyone. The consciousness, the motive. And it covers love, which is the plan and design of everyone. And of course, principle is the system and structure of everyone. If we do that one simple little thing, then it includes all humanity in our work on any particular treatment that we are giving. Any treatment that we are expounding and focusing on. There is no exclusivity in prayer. God is open to all, universally, individually, and directly, with equal importance to every single one of God's ideas. No one is more important or less important than anyone else, because every one is an idea, a reflection of the same infinite one. We each have our own individuality and our own niche to fulfill. It is for us exclusively. No one can take it away. No one can infringe on it, dilute it, divert it. When one focuses on mind, we know that mind includes creative ability, capacity, facility, capability. We know that that combined with creative activity and action creates power. So one can simply pray for all mankind by simply including that statement when the previous statements are made. There is only one intelligence, and that intelligence includes all humanity. There is only one creative activity, one capacity, one facility, one capability. All humanity benefits from that because it is absolutely omnipresent. Nothing can block it because there is no other power besides the power of God. And the power of God is available by reflection to all humanity. Everyone individually, everyone in groups, and everyone universally. Everyone that is in thought benefits from our thought, our focus. God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. The glossary indicates that good includes God. Spirit, omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, and omniaction. Therefore, the omnipresence of God includes all humanity. So any single quality of God is already within every single individual. All 8.3 billion. All one has to do is to let it come out. Let it be recognized. Practice it. Live it. Because it is there. The innateness is already within. The qualities of spirit include flawlessness and therefore transparency, because there's nothing that can block the, which enables one to see straight through anything that exists. All reality is totally transparent. All we have to do is remove the veil that we are permitting to block the real view, the view of reality, and then we can see it. We need to remember that God is all-seeing. It states in the glossary, just above the definition of good, the definition of God. And remember, the glossary covers the key to the scriptures, because it is in chapter 17, and from chapter 15 to 18 is the key to the scriptures. So in the definition of God from the glossary, it covers the key to all of the details. Chapter 14 is in the basic part of Science and Health, which is chapter 14, and therefore it is details, whereas the glossary is the key to the details, the key to understanding chapters 1 through 14. It has been stated that the glossary includes all of science and health. The complete theme, meat of Christian Science, is within the glossary. If we understand the glossary thoroughly, we understand Christian Science. Nothing would be hidden. Now, since spirit is flawless, and therefore by definition is transparent, then it has to be reflective, because there are no particles that can interfere. There is no opaqueness. And if there's no opaqueness, that means that it is totally reflective. Soul being spiritual sense, and spiritual because the only substance is spirit, that means that all of humanity has the ability to reflect those same spiritual senses. And we must see that they not only have the ability, but we must see them as reflecting these spiritual senses. Just as Jesus saw the perfect man, we must see all humanity as being perfect. Mary Baker Eddy devoted time several times a day just to make sure that she was not being influenced by criticism, that it could not be a part of any word going out of her thought, speech, or action, nor can she be subject to the criticism that is directed at her. Soul, being spiritual sense, as already noted, means that the senses that people have available to utilize are all of a spiritual nature. And since the senses are spiritual senses, that means that one can only see the good, the perfect, about everyone and everything. That means all of humanity is benefiting from the spiritual senses which were created by and maintained by the one and only infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And that infinity is accompanied by the incorporeal divine supreme qualities of God and all of God's attributes and all of God's manifestation. That means each one of us in our true nature are incorporeal, divine, supreme, and a part of infinite. For we are reflecting the infinitude of God. We are not limited. There is no finity in the infinite. We can apply this same strategy to the next synonymous term, which is principle. Principle is denoted as being the system and structure of all humanity, of all existence, of God itself. Everything has a principle that controls its outcome if the principle is applied. If personality is put aside, ego is laid to rest, and if the light is enabled to be shining from God directly to all of the people that are involved. And basically, all humanity is involved in everything that God created and maintains, which means every single idea. So if an inventor comes up with an idea, that idea is not from personality. That idea is from the one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. If an inventor comes up with an idea that is going to be for the benefit of humanity, we know those ideas came from the one and only incorporeal mind. Incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. Otherwise, it could not be a benefit to humanity. It couldn't be a benefit to anyone, even the one that invented it, unless it was from the one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind. The mind that is all intelligence, all wisdom, and all knowing. The mind that is all creative. The mind that is all capacity, all functionality, all capability, all facility. The mind that reflects the action of the omni-action of God. If we realize that that action of God then brings forth the power, which is reflected by the omnipotence of God, which is a part of the omnipotence of God, then we know that that is for the benefit of all mankind. Because that's God's only reason for existing, is to be the source of all reality. And that, of course, includes all mankind. So everything about everyone and everything is a reflection of what God represents, because God is the only source. God is the primordial, number one. That's where the buck stops. It doesn't go back any further, because that is the origin of all good. And if it's not good, it's not part of reality. If it's not part of reality, we have nothing to do with it. It cannot affect us. It cannot persuade us. It cannot delude us. It cannot divert us. It cannot stop or reverse any good activity in which we are involved. And we know that that is true for all humanity. Because all humanity is a reflection of the one divinity, which is God itself. The one that is incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite. It's very simple. If it is 100% good, then it is 100% God-like and God-sourced. There is no other source. There is no other power. It was mentioned previously that principle is system and structure. Nothing can be permanent unless it is a system and structure that is of a spiritual nature, which means that the principle has to be of the substance of spirit. And if the principle is of the substance of spirit, and God being omnipresent, that means it automatically is the system and structure of all humanity. There is not a single individual that can be outside of that one permanent, omnipresent, incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite principle, system and structure, the foundation. It's common to think of something like a rock mountain to be something of substance. But what is a rock mountain? It is only a single view. It might be my view, it might be someone else's view. A photographer might look at that as one thing, and someone that has no idea about details may not see anything at all that is special about what the photographer or the artist might see as something very special. So that is viewpoint. But the foundation has to be there, or no one would be able to see it. No one. And since God is all-seeing, God certainly can see it, just like God is the only consciousness. And therefore, God is the only truth, because consciousness is truth. That means that God is conscious of God's own creation, God's own manifestation. And God has to be conscious of God being its own source, which is reflected by its own manifestation. So the principle has to be harmonious because it is system and structure. Chaos is what is not harmonious. All humanity is affected by the harmonious nature of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite principle. It cannot be out of order. It cannot be chaotic. It has to be harmonious because that's the only reality of principle. All mankind also has to reflect life, for life means that one is experiencing by living the qualities of God. Jesus had to recognize that whomever he saw and healed, it was a result of recognizing in that individual the qualities of God, the perfection of God. In reality, no one could ever see an inkling of the perfection of God unless they realize that it is omnipresent, which means that it is present for every single individual, every group, and universally. Otherwise, it wouldn't exist for a single individual. It has to exist for all individuals, all groups, all classes, and universally in order for it to exist for a single one. That means us. It cannot exist for us. We cannot benefit from anything that is derived from God unless everyone has the facility, functionality, capacity, capability to also benefit from that very same omnipresent quality. Period. That's why we're all brethren. We're all brethren because we are all from the same source. And we must recognize that. And if we do that, it's not possible for us to violate what Mr. Fluno so succinctly states in his short article on criticism. He flat out says that we cannot progress if we're going to criticize. Now, how can we criticize anything or anyone if we realize that we are all from the same source? That the incorporeal divine supreme and infinite mind is for everyone. The mind that I have, by reflection, is the very identical mind that everyone has. No one is stupid, because God is omni-intelligent. No one is ugly, because God is infinite soul, which is beauty. No one can have bad morals, because in reality, we all have the substance of spirit, not matter. And we all have the soul, which is spiritual, which means that we are not influenced by a so-called material sense. No emotion. No tricks making us think that we came from a womb and were born in sin. If Jesus thought that about a single one of his patients, in which he demonstrated the healing power of truth, he couldn't have done it. He couldn't look at a single one as a sinner. He couldn't look at as a single one as being sick. What would have happened to those 10 lepers if he would have looked at them as being leprous? They would still be that way. They would never have been healed. They would never have been seen to be the pure idea of God without any infectious disease. He saw them as a perfect idea, a pure reflection of spirit. That's the only way they could have been healed. Now, the fact that only 1 out of 10 gave gratitude for it means that 1 out of 10 had a true reformation of consciousness. But that was not the fault of Jesus, because the patient has to be receptive to the administration of the healing effort that is put forth by the practitioner. Mary Baker Eddy describes Jesus as the most scientific man that ever trod the globe. So that means that he was pure, because the only true science is the science of spirit, the science of mind, the one and only incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, the science of omniscience, which is omni-intelligence, omni-wisdom, and omni-knowing. It is the science of mind, which is bringing forth continuously the creative ability of mind, the creative ability of God itself. And when that's combined with capability, capacity, functionality, all these things that have been mentioned several times in this treatment, then it is coupled with the omni-action of God, which brings forth the omnipotence of God in individual experience. And it is perfect because it is the mind which is composed of the substance of spirit. And this applies to all humanity, every individual, every group, every class, and universally. You see how easy it is to pray for humanity? All we have to do is think about any topic and include in the language that it applies to every individual, every group, every class, and universally. Then all humanity is benefited by our focus on whatever the topic is at the moment. No one is excluded. Everyone is benefited. And this is what Mary Baker Eddy pleaded for the Christian Scientists to do. But they failed. They failed. For the last 100 years, there has been a substantial decline in at least the published healings. Anything that's been made public has been minuscule compared to when she was here. And I think that's one of the reasons why she included in Science and Health the 100 pages in chapter 18, where she verified and published what phenomenal effect had taken place from individual effort without even having a practitioner involved. Because these people were so hungry to get rid of the false belief of life, truth, and intelligence in matter that they earnestly studied Science and Health with Key to the Scriptures by Mary Baker Eddy. And look at the results. We have deciphered all 100 pages, and we come up with something like 465, I believe, is the number. 465 different elements that were healed in those 100 pages. That means almost 5 per page. And almost everyone records multiple things that were healed, which includes things that they were not even thinking about in their study. In fact, basically, they were not thinking about anything in their study except what Mary Baker Eddy's written words were saying and conveying to them individually, and of course available for all humanity to read and reflect on. The best ideas have often come from not even thinking about the topic at hand. Someone might be on vacation. They might be sitting on a beach, just seeing the beautiful view of the ocean, maybe a sunrise or a sunset, or just the activity of the day. And all of a sudden, a thought would come to them which would solve a problem that they had been contemplating for some time prior to going on the trip. Or maybe it was in the town where they live. Maybe they live on the beach. But they got away from the hustle and bustle, and they were contemplating something of a beautiful nature. And all of a sudden, the solution would come to them. Post-it notes. They're not so popular now because we use computers. But for a long time, they were very popular for making a note and maybe sticking it even on your computer screen or on your refrigerator to remind you to do something. That was invented without thinking about it. They were actually searching for a different kind of adhesive, a different product altogether. And they came up with this and realized how convenient it could be in doing the things just mentioned, and it became an industry. Various manufacturers produced them. Getting our thought off of what we want so badly to solve can be the healthiest way and the fastest way to solve it. Think about something besides what you feel under pressure to solve. And then the thought comes forward on the solution. Jesus could not have been thinking about the sinful or the sick or the dead in order to heal it. He had to be thinking about a higher level. Einstein stated that we cannot solve a problem if we deal with it on the same level in which the problem surfaced. We have to go to a higher level. And of course, the more divine level we go to, the better opportunity there is, because we're getting totally out of the limitation of the sense of material life and intelligence in matter, in limitation, in mortal mind, in personality, in ego. We can't be thinking about that if we're going to solve a problem that appeared when we were in that mode of thought. It is so easy to think about all humanity when we're thinking about any particular topic that we think is something that we must focus on for ourselves or maybe one other individual or a few other individuals or whatever. The point is, we have to see that that solution is available for all humanity, and all humanity can benefit from that fact. The fact is not isolated. The fact is universal. Facts are always universal. That's why they can never be hidden forever. They have to come out because they're universal. They're omnipresent. Whereas the belief of mortal mind and limitation and problems and chaos is a finite view, which is not a view of reality. It's only a view of a personal opinion. It is letting error get its foot in the door. It's picking up that phone that is ringing its head off and listening to something that is untrue and letting it affect our atmosphere. Shakespeare said, "There's nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." What makes it so for the individual that is letting that influence their thought? Mary Baker Eddy realized how important that statement was, and so she put it in the very beginning of the textbook. The very beginning. Just like she put the article about love your enemies at the very front end of Miscellaneous Writings. Miscellaneous Writings is I think that's the second largest book that she wrote. I don't know how many pages, I think it's over 300. And she has an article that is entitled Love Your Enemies at the very beginning of it, at page 8. I don't know, there might be something before that, but it's on page 8 that it begins. How about Christian Science Practice? In the textbook, at the very beginning of that chapter, she put the story of Mary Magdalene. It's about love. Forgiving, seeing the purity in someone that has been reformed, seeing them as reformed, seeing them as purified, seeing them as someone who wants to serve truth. She wanted to serve Jesus, wash his feet. Jesus wanted to serve his disciples. He washed their feet. That was a common courtesy because people were wearing open sandals, apparently, walking on dirt roads. So their feet and their ankles and everything about their lower leg would be filthy with dust. So it was very refreshing to feel them to be clean. Important common courtesy to clean your visitor's feet. How often does one do it now? Have we ever done it? What care do we give to our children in training their thought about what God is? If we're a teacher, what influence do we have on the students that would be a lasting Christian value of love and caring for someone else and something that would benefit someone besides themselves? Are we teaching a standard that should be the standard for all children if we're a teacher of children in school? Are we raising the bar? It's obvious that the children have been abused absolutely from beginning to end for decades on end. Teachers' unions, all these other unions that affect everything and how everyone operates and conducts their job and everything else. Corruption in government. We have a responsibility as Christian Scientists to have a universal impact on what we learned or have the opportunity to learn from the beautiful discovery of Christian Science. Are we letting it affect how we conduct our thought, speech, and action in everything we do, everyone we have communication with, and every action that we take? Are we praying ceaselessly that will impact all humanity? Are we saying the words that this applies to all humanity? That this applies to every individual, every group, every class, every possible individual in existence, all humanity, universally? Well, we mentioned that life is living the qualities of God. Truth is the consciousness of all humanity. And of course, this includes motive. Which means that the speech, thought, speech, and action should all come from this motive and consciousness, which is a part of truth. Are we utilizing it? Are we thinking before we act, or before we talk, or before we do anything or say anything? Jesus said, yea, yea, nay, nay, should be our answer. A longtime friend I had said, before you say something, think, does it need to be said? We've probably all read about adults cannot be taught. One can offer information, but the formative part of a human's functionality ends in the early years. We can teach them when they're a few years old, and of course, as soon as they're born, under the belief of birth. But it doesn't take very many years before they're done. They have to want to learn. We can offer information. We can explain the benefits of something and the detriment of not doing it. But whether or not they learn is up to them. We can't teach adults. Adults have to learn on their own. It's our job to be a good example. Are we a good example? Are we worthy of someone looking at how we are conducting our thought, speech, and action? Are we letting our light shine like a lighthouse? Or are we letting it be filtered by having thought, speech, and action that is not 100% godlike? What is in our consciousness, which is our thoughts, which affects all thought, speech, and action? Our environment is affected by our thoughts. Are we projecting an environment of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love? Are we being passive and giving the baton to mortal mind? Imagine being in a relay race. What baton are we carrying and who are we giving it to? Is it worthy to be showing it to anyone else? Or is it filled with holes? Like a sinking ship, or a sinking boat, or a sinking canoe. Well, that's truth. Now, if we've managed to go through the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth, guess what the reward is? The reward is what Mary Baker Eddy put as the first example to study in Christian Science Practice, and one of the first pages on page 8 of Miscellaneous Writings, and that is the big L word. L. L-O-V-E. We can be experiencing love, we can be exhibiting love, if we have gone to the trouble to do our best to be an example of the incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. And everything we're saying here is absolutely including all humanity. For this is for the benefit of not just an individual, whether it's ourselves or someone else. This is for the benefit of all mankind. Every single individual, every single group, every single class. If 10 people are working on a project, that's what I mean by a group. They're covered. Now, we can only have love after we have experienced an improved understanding of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth. Because love represents wholeness, completeness, fulfillment, success. Guess what major theme that love represents? Love represents plan and design. This means that mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, and truth all have to be in accordance with love. For it is the plan and design that is the background, that is the foundation for every single other quality of God. Every single attribute, every single word in the dictionary that could possibly be used to represent God is under the plan and design of L-O-V-E. Period. There's no escape. If what we are doing, if what we are thinking and what we are saying is not surrounded by the atmosphere of love, we're wasting our time. Because it's not godlike. I don't care how good of an engineer we can be. The structure of that building is not going to be worth 3 cents if it's not done with love. What do we have to love? We have to love the principle of what we're doing. There are rules of mathematics. There's rules of engineering. There's rules of the materials, the strength and the stress factors and all these kinds of things. Imagine building a 100-story building. Or the tallest building in the world. Because that's what we're building. We're building the strongest building in the world. We're building our consciousness. And it's supposed to be the consciousness of God that we're reflecting. That's what we're building in our thought. Now, is it important for that to apply for all humanity or not? Imagine that we're at a friendly barbecue or a beach party or anything, a bunch of friends. And maybe we have this game set up for the kids. Maybe we have it set up for a combination of the kids and adults. You know, we're just frolicking around, having fun. If we are thinking spiritual qualities, everything we do, including the fun we're involved in, is going to be more fun. Everything we think, everything we say, is going to be better. If we're thinking spiritual qualities, if we're thinking the qualities of God, we want to be thinking about joy and happiness. If we're in a tug of war, we want to be thinking about strength. Where does that strength come from? Of course, this is all fun and games. We're not in a nuclear war trying to destroy a nation or a population. The love has to be the foundation. Think of it as being the lubricant. Think of all of these different qualities of God being a bunch of gears. We got a gear that is called mind and a gear that is called spirit and soul and principle and life and truth. These are all gears that have to mesh together. Think about mind. If the substance that we're contemplating is not intelligent, we don't want it. Do we want steel that is defective when we build this 100-story building? Like the publicly available articles are about some of the steel that came from China. They undercut the price of everyone else, and along with that, they undercut the quality. I remember people used to make fun of things from Japan after World War II. I don't know, in the 60s, they thought a car from Japan was a piece of junk. Now what? Japan makes the finest of everything. The finest electronics, the finest automobiles, the finest motorcycles. I talked to an individual just in the last 24 hours. And I happened to have a need to be riding with him to go somewhere that we needed to go together. And I said, boy, what year is this car? It seems like new. He said, 2018. It was a Japanese car. Boy, it was like new. I said, how many kilometers do you have on this? And he looked at his odometer there. He said, it says 321. I said, 321,000 kilometers? He said, yes. I mean, it was like new. It was quiet. The ride was great. Over 300,000 kilometers. I used to own a Japanese motorcycle, a Yamaha V-Max. An American motorcycle, you'd be lucky if you could get 4,000 to 5,000 revolutions per minute, RPM. These Japanese were so finely engineered that they would go up to like 10,000 with no problem. And quiet and smooth. No vibration. The performance was unbelievable. Nothing made in the U.S. matched it. So they went from being considered a country of junk, trinkets, to producing the finest engineered things that we had. The ones from Germany aren't any better. Germany was always considered the ultimate in engineering. Now I don't believe they're considered any better than Japanese. Love includes lubricant. So I started to mention about, imagine each of these seven synonymous terms being a gear. And imagine you had no lubrication, no grease, nothing that let them come together smoothly and quietly. Even though they might be engineered with very close tolerances and fit together perfectly, you're still going to have the noise of steel next to steel. I presume maybe it's iron next to iron, whatever. But anyway, it's gears that are metal. There's going to be loud clanking noises. But if you have lubricant, you change the whole picture. Well, if you have your entire life without love, you're missing the one ingredient that is required to make it work. Because that's the entire plan and design of all existence. If there's one word that would describe what Jesus represented, I believe it would be love. If there's one word that would describe Mary Baker Eddy, in order to be able to combat all of the attacks on her. I mean, she was attacked by her own board of directors. And as soon as she left in physical form, they took her picture out of her own textbook. They tore down and blew up all kinds of statues and things that were in her memory. A beautiful pyramid that represented some very specific prophetic things that she fulfilled. They forbid the students that lived with her to even talk about her. I mean, it's unbelievable. They had so much resentment against a woman that could do all this. These were a bunch of men. They had so much resentment against this woman that could be so successful and to hold them at bay. But boy, when she passed on, they were jumping up and down with glee instead of gratitude. They were so happy she was gone. They ripped apart her manual, violated almost every provision in it. But there she stood up until the time she left. She stood strong with love. The only thing that could have held her up. She said she was probably the weakest human being that existed as a physical body. But as a spiritual identity of God, there was no one stronger. Even Jesus was no stronger than she was. They both faced the same kind of resentment and animosity. You know, who followed Jesus? John? 1 out of 12? Who followed Mary Baker Eddy? I don't know. I'd have to think about it. Almost no one. In fact, when she had like 2,000 guests that came out there to her home in Pleasant View before she moved into Chestnut Hill in the Boston Back Bay, there were about 2,000 people there, and she looked out on them and she told Laura Sargent, one of her right-hand people, she says, "I don't see a single Christian Scientist out there." You know, she could feel it. She could feel where their thoughts were. She could interpret their consciousness as a mass, all 2,000 of them. She says, "I don't see a single one." Not a single one. The only reason she left was because they threatened to put her in an insane asylum. She was examined by people that wanted to defeat her, you know, by psychologists and psychiatrists and so forth. And they say, "We found her sound as a dollar, with an astute ability to see the big picture and to analyze things, to talk intelligently. There's no one better, in better condition than what she is right this moment. So, you know, just like the government can do all kinds of things, I just saw for the second time the movie called Tucker, A Man in His Dreams. It's about a car. He built the best car by far, built 50 of them. And as of the time of the movie, 46 of them were still running. But they wouldn't let him build any more because the big three automakers were scared of him because he built something so much better than they had. Years before they included safety glass and seat belts and I think it was disc brakes and a variety of other things. I mean, the car would go 130 miles an hour smoothly. He had padded dash. Years before any of these other ones would do any of that. They were all forced to do it by, you know, whatever pressure there was brought by the population and a few heroes that would be out there fighting for the safety of the population. Same idea. They hated him. How about Tesla? 100 years ago, 120 years ago, he could give us free electricity. How would that go over? They couldn't wait to get rid of him. Free electricity, it's in the ground. It's there. Because we're living in a magnetic field. We're not living in substance of dirt. We're living in a magnetic field. Quantum physics proved that atoms were nothing but consciousness. They kept breaking it down and they realized, well, there's nothing there. Where is it? They kept breaking it down until there was nothing there. It was consciousness. Consciousness of the people that were viewing it. If you read the article, The Psychologist and the Magician, in fact, the foreword is by Herbert Eustace, and Rodwick is the author. Very, very enlightening article about the same topic. Our thoughts produce our experience. That's what it's all about. Are our thoughts about love? Then we're going to experience fulfillment. Because love is fulfillment. It is wholeness. It is completeness. It is where everything is put together. And this is true for all humanity. Every individual is included. Every group, every class, every event. Is that what we're thinking about? Are we including all humanity and everything that we do in our prayerful work, in our study? Mary Baker Eddy did it multiple times a day. That was her duty. That was what she was here for. To see the good in everyone. And how did she do it? She dug out the science of the healing work of Jesus to do it. And what was that science revealing? That everyone was made by the same Father, Mother, God. Everyone is brethren. That's what we need to be seeing. If we're going to heal ourselves and others, the world, every event, every class, every group, the government, how are you going to heal a totally, totally corrupt government? You can't do it physically. You can only do it through science, the science of the Bible, the science of Christianity, the science of how Jesus healed. The science of how Mary Becquerel healed. The science of how Frederick L. Rawson healed, one of the greatest practitioners of all time. He's the one that was at a shooting match. You know, he was a great sportsman, excelled in everything he did, every sport. Well, everything he did. People came to him from all over the world to solve electrical problems. He was an expert on electricity. That's what enabled him to understand that we were in a magnetic field and that we had to short circuit the wrong thoughts in order to let the right thoughts be dominant in our own experience, our own thought, speech, and action. He's the one that healed the man when he was looking out the window that had a load of rocks dumped on him. And he said, "There is nothing but God." And the man jumped up out of the rocks like a rocket. Not a scratch on him. Totally healed instead of being dead. Time and time again, he wrote the encyclopedia, Treatment or Healing by True Prayer, that has 1,315 different ailments listed. Just like the chapter on fruitage has 486, he has 1,315 listed in that little book that's only, I don't know, 270 pages or something. Yeah, we deciphered it. We indexed everything. What an education that is, just to read how to heal 1,315 different ailments. All the same basis, it's done on love. What do we have to do? We have to love the principle. We have to love the intelligence, the wisdom and the knowing and the capacity and capability and functionality and the action and the power and the presence. You know, we have to love everything about everything. That's what we have to do. We have to love it. We have to nurture it. We have to practice it. We have to think. We have to talk. We have to speak. We have to say, we have to act. Act it out. I've said this in other treatments, and that is that you have to fake it till you make it. You may not understand everything you say. In fact, you might not understand anything you say if you're repeating a verse from the Bible or from Mary Baker Eddy's writings or from other inspired writers. You might not understand anything, but you fake it. You act like you do. In other words, talk it, think it, and act it. And eventually those functionalities will come in line with what you're saying. It's like instead of listening to the corrupt news media, you are going to listen to KOG, as Mr. Windlow explains it, the Kingdom of God, which is announcing only the facts about God. The truth about God and how it applies to you and all humanity. Every individual, every activity, every group, no matter what the topic is, all humanity, universally. That's where our thought needs to be. We can make every single treatment apply to all humanity. Mary Baker Eddy prayed for all humanity multiple times a day. And she also prayed to know that she was only looking for truth, only looking for the good in everything and everyone, period. She was her own policeman. She was policing her thought. She transported herself from Boston out to the West Coast and stayed there for 2 weeks. Instant transportation. She did it all mentally, instantaneously. What do we want to accomplish? Do we want to accomplish anything for all humanity? Do we give to anyone that is making that effort? Are you giving anything to the Mary Baker Eddy website? Or you just smile and say thank you? Or maybe you just smile and don't say thank you? Or maybe you don't even smile I don't know what you do. Very few people express gratitude in any form to the website. They want everything free, but are they willing to give anything? Are they willing to give anything, even a kind thought, let alone money to help pay for the up to three programmers? This is Sunday. We have two programmers working today. Two programmers. We, the volunteers, are paying for that out of our own pocket. What are you paying for it? $25 a year? Maybe nothing ever? Most people pay nothing ever. I talked to a fellow I knew for some 30 years not long ago, and I said, do you ever go to the website? He said, yeah, my wife and I go there all the time. I think we've downloaded everything you have. We're always listening to something. He had never given anything to the website. A few weeks after that, he called us and asked us for a donation for his own survival. He was out of money. He needed money for food, shelter, and clothing. Well, that's where we find ourselves when we are not grateful, when we're not giving anything. Giving is the solution for lack. The solution for lack is giving. Giving, giving. If you're giving, you can't be thinking about lacking. Getting your mind off of the problem is the best way to solve it. Are you going to give? Give to everybody. You can give a smile when you're walking down the street and benefit everybody that sees your smile. Are you giving what you need to your children? Are you helping them on their homework or whatever they need? Are you taking care of their needs? Or are you just like all the other average parent that just too busy with themselves and let their children be at the under the care of the teachers, which are totally beyond help? Selfish, egotistical, under the control of teachers' unions and so forth. Unbelievable. Unbelievable what the educational system has become. Is that what you're letting your children be influenced by for the rest of their life? In their formative years, that's what you're letting them be involved in? Or are you one of the few that is homeschooling so that you're sure that they're going to get the right standard in their learning? How about trying to influence others? If you want to benefit all mankind, how about trying to influence others to care about their children, maybe group together? Maybe one of you is really good at sports, so you can teach them sports. Maybe another one is really good at math. Maybe you're a mathematician. Maybe you are an engineer that has learned a high degree of math. Maybe you could teach them something about that. How about somebody who might be a musician, play the piano or other instruments, teach them about that. If people would work together, they would get unlimited things accomplished. Are you doing it? Are you working together with anyone about anything? Well, when you start doing it, if you're not doing it now, your life is going to totally turn around. Like the people in that chapter 18 of Fruitage, they talk about their life totally changed. Totally changed. They didn't even dream about some of the problems that they had, and yet they were healed. They didn't even dream that this could change their whole life, but it did. Are you going to let it change your life? Are you going to roll up your sleeves and be serious about your study of Christian Science? Richard Strain mentioned that he really was at the end of his rope. He's on our website as an author. And he asked a longtime Christian Scientist, he says, what do I do? And the individual's first question was, are you studying 5 hours a day? He said, how can I study 5 hours a day? He said, I've only got 6 hours left when I get everything else done. If I studied 5 hours a day, I'd only have 1 hour sleep. He said, what's the thing you want most in your life? He said, to turn it around. I want to become more spiritual. I want to get my mind out of this rat race. Well, he made the decision to study 5 hours a day. By the end of the first week, his life had already started to turn around. 1 week, within the week. I think it was a Monday or Tuesday he started. So in less than 7 days, his life already started to turn around. And he ended up becoming one of the more popular ones to be demanded to speak about Christian Science. Yeah, what are you devoting? There's 1,440 minutes. How many are you devoting to serious study? You certainly can't take away from any TV time or listening to news or any of those really important things that are going to affect your benefit you for the rest of your life, right? No, you can't take anything away from that. You're sleeping 10 hours a day. You can't take anything away from that. You're drinking coffee and reading the newspaper in the morning for 15 or 30 minutes. Oh, you can't take any time away from that. You're driving and just letting your mind wander for 30 or 45 minutes a day each way to work and back, an hour and a half a day. No, you can't take any time from that. I mean, in today's world, we've got all of these videos and audios. Well, you can't be watching video while you're driving, but you could certainly be listening to audios. We have over 100 treatments, I think 127 treatments as of right now, on the Mary Baker Eddy website. And as of now, they're all free. But are they really free? No. You have to give something. You have to give up your belief in life, truth, and intelligence and matter. You have to want to improve. And it doesn't hurt if you give a little donation here and there. We got one person that gives $5 a month. But it's every month. It's an automatic withdrawal from their one of their accounts, automatically, just like clockwork, $5 a month. If everybody did that, we wouldn't have to take everything out of our own pocket to pay for the programmers, which we do, because we know that how important this is, so we're willing to pay for the programmers. We pay competitive wages. We have between 1 and 3 programmers working almost every day of the year. As I mentioned, today we have 2, and this is Sunday. You have to decide what you want out of life. If you really want to move out of the rut that you're in, if you feel you're in a rut, then you have to do something about it. Remember, there's only one God. That one God is incorporeal, divine, supreme, and infinite mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. And that one mind, that one God, covers all humanity. They all benefit. Whether you're doing anything about it or not is up to you. That's your experience. But it's there for everyone. And when you get off the dime and start doing something constructive, working towards saving all humanity, and get your mind off of yourself, then you will see a real turnaround in your life, because your life is going to be reflecting your thoughts, and your thoughts are going to be for the benefit of all mankind. And guess what? You're a part of that. You will benefit from trying to help others. The greatest joy anyone could ever have is helping others anonymously, where they don't even know where it came from, whether it's money or whether it's clothing, whether it's a good thought, whether it's a smile, whatever it is. If you can do it anonymously, that is the premium way to give. That's the best. God is all in all. God is the only God there is. And as Mr. Rawson said when he healed the man that came out from underneath the rocks, there is nothing but God. Amen.